California and red clay of Georgia.
What's up, everybody? Today is Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. This is A Talk in the Attic, and I'm your host, Kirk Ross. Our four-year escape room experience is finally drawing to a close, it seems. To escape this particular nightmare, all we had to do was coordinate a massive interstate conspiracy in which we created millions of fake ballots that skewed the presidential results our way. Why, yes, and it's funny you should ask. These fake ballots must also provide additional House seats to the GOP and keep them at a Senate advantage. Good thinking. That was the trickiest part of the whole conspiracy, to be honest. You guys remember my friends the lemurs, right? I promised them some airtime, and I'm not one to say Mexico was going to pay for the wall and then not make them pay for it, so, as I promised, here they are. All the way from John Ball Zoo here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Louie, Lois, and Larry, the Conspiracy of Lemurs.
Well, well, well. If it isn't Mr. Start a Podcast, so it looks like you've got friends. I bet you're happy.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm a centrist, Larry.
The only center you're at is the center of my fist, artist boy.
Let's keep this professional here, okay? Let's talk about what I know you want to talk about. The election.
The election? More like steel election, Kirk. In Philadelphia, only Democrat poll observers were allowed in. GOP was excluded. And did you know Will Smith's father voted in this election? We must immediately stop the count. Wait a minute, Lois, I thought we need to keep counting. Guys, come on. We need to stop the count in some places and keep counting in other places.
I mean, this is hard to keep straight even for me. So how are we supposed to know where?
Where we're ahead, we need to stop the counting. Simple. And where we're behind, we need to keep counting. Even maybe stuff some ballots ourselves, you know what I'm saying? Enough about the election, Kirk. I have a message for you and all of the listeners. A message of hope, of unity. As we enter this holiday season, let's focus on what makes all of us so similar and ignore what makes us different. It doesn't matter if you didn't vote the same as your relatives, that's one small difference. Instead, work together towards a common goal that we can all get behind.
Larry, that is such a nuanced and respectful take that you've offered. Thank you for that. And while I appreciate the sentiment, I have to say that a lot of us are having trouble finding any common ground with the other side. So since you're in such a unifying mood today, would you share with us a goal that we can all work towards?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Kirk. Despite what HGTV wants you to believe, Wayfair is not an online retailer specializing in trendy home furnishings at low prices.
Oh, really? I mean, I've been pretty happy with Wayfair, actually.
Wayfair's real customer base, the one that matters, is the liberal elite, who use the site to buy and sell children disguised as high-end cabinetry.
All right, boys, that's enough. Get out of here. Go on and get scat! I thought Larry the Lemur, who today proved once again he's the most conspiratorial of the conspiracy, was onto something. But then he took us down Avenue Q there at the end. And to think I almost booked a conference room down at the Four Seasons for that interview. Of course, when I say the Four Seasons, I mean to say Four Seasons Total Landscaping, the site of Rudy Giuliani's press conference, the content of which somehow surpassed the chosen venue in absurdity. I mean, nothing says credible press conference like setting up a microphone next to a pile of dirt behind an industrial building along the New Jersey border. Hey, boss, Rudy needs a place to look relevant. You know any place? Yeah. We could put him in front of that dented garage door behind the landscaping business. Hey, boss, landscaping business? You know, the one down by the porno shop. Across the street from the cremation joint there? Wow, boss, I mean, these guys ain't even trying to hide it no more, are they? Most of you already know this, but in case you didn't, a quick synopsis. Rudy Giuliani, acting as an official representative for the sitting president of the United States, held a press conference Saturday afternoon to espouse meritless claims of election fraud in Pennsylvania. Said president tweeted that Rudy would be holding this important press event at Four Seasons Philadelphia, the classiest place available for such an occasion. Minutes later, the tweet was deleted and was replaced by one that clarified the location as Four Seasons Total Landscaping. Some 27 miles northeast of the Four Seasons Philadelphia in downtown Philly. I'm dying to know the story behind this location. Did some intern make the mistake thinking that he was booking the Four Seasons and instead ended up at the malt shop? Maybe Rudy just opted for the lower cost option knowing that he'll never get reimbursed for any of this. Maybe all the bowling alleys were booked. Who knows? But one thing is for certain. While Rudy was telling a few reporters from Breitbart and InfoWars that Martians may potentially be casting votes. An actual quote from Rudy, by the way. Jessica and I were walking about town with a couple of friends when a sudden eruption of random and spontaneous horn honks filled the air. Just when I thought a 75-degree sunny November day in Michigan couldn't get any happier, cars started honking. I'm not talking about people laying on their horns. No, that's reserved for our down-the-street neighbors every weekday at 7 a.m. Just the occasional little chorus of joy from a handful of vehicles here and there. It was something I'll remember forever. On a weekend which already featured weather that appeared satisfied with how the week was going, even the cars jumped in on the jubilation. It wasn't about policy. It wasn't even about politics. It was about knowing in your heart, regardless of the color of your tie, that we're in for a lot less name-calling, a lot less division, and hopefully a lot less Wayfair. That's a callback, people. A QAnon callback. A qualback. Lemurs, Rudy, Tony D the mobster, help me out here. Let's start the show. Sometimes, folks, it's hard coming clean with yourself, isn't it? Sometimes we hide our weaknesses in hopes that if we ignore the issue, that it might just go away. Sometimes we dwell on our weaknesses, focusing all sorts of mental energy on it, but without taking any real meaningful action towards improvement. Well, the buck stops here, at least for me, and at least for this one particular issue. I'm not going to run from it any longer. I have to be honest. With myself, with Jessica, with all of you. My name is Kirk Ross, and I have no idea what to do with my arms, most of the time. You may not even notice it when you see me. You may have even thought to yourself over the years, Kirk Ross, now there's a guy who knows what to do with his arms. And while I appreciate that sentiment, I cannot accept your hypothetical thought compliment. Because I move around on a near constant basis trying to figure out what I should do next with my arms. Walking is kind of cool, because it does seem like swinging your arms in opposite directions with each other is socially acceptable. But have you ever tried swinging your arms together while walking? You're picturing it correctly. Instead of one arm forward, one arm back, they move in unison. Both forward, both back. It's truly bizarre. It's a weird way to walk. I would never consider it myself. You probably haven't either. I just want to make sure. So walking is one thing, but coming to a stop is even murkier territory when it comes to appropriate activities for our arms. This weekend, while we were walking around GR, I found myself really struggling on what to do when I was standing around. These days, most of us are walking around occupying our hands with our smartphones, but what about those of us trying to spend less time doing that? When you take the two-handed phone hold off the table in a standing around situation, what's left? Sometimes I put one hand in my pocket. Sometimes I go with my idea of what a cool guy was back in 1992. That's right, the one thumb tucked down into my jeans pocket, maybe lean on a brick wall or something. This always starts out with high expectations, but fizzles out quickly, never lasting more than a few seconds. After that, I typically go for the hands on my hips look, which I must admit feels pretty good, but it doesn't exactly express the idea I have of how I want to look when standing around. Some dudes can look super cool with their hands down below their waistline, making narrow triangles on either side of their torso. But as I've grown older, I've developed a propensity to prop my hands up a little higher than the Hollister swimsuit model that you've got in your head right now. For real, for some reason, my preferred grip location, when I put my hands up on my hips, is up around the middle of my rib cage, just beneath my chest, if I'm being honest. I don't know why I prefer that area these days, but I do. Maybe it's because my midsection is softer than it used to be, and it's a little harder up here. I don't know, but regardless of why I do it, the truth of the matter is that this is no way to stand. In case you didn't already know, I'm a tall guy. But beyond that, my arms are freakishly long, even for my height. So when I take my 6'8" wingspan and throw my hands halfway up my torso, the end result is really something to behold. Inside, I feel comfortable, like a dude chilling as he waits for his number at the deli. On the outside, though, I look like a dude who's ready for a game of Red Rover to erupt at a moment's notice. These gangly arms of mine create problems in other scenarios as well. Like when I'm sitting down. When there are armrests available, then I feel a little bit better about the whole situation. And when there are no armrests, then I'm not afraid to stretch each of these bad boys out and put them on the neighboring chair backs. I'll never forget the first time I pulled the yawn move at a movie theater. It was back in 1999. The movie was about to begin. After going back and forth in my head for a few seconds, I sprang into action and threw my elbow back as I twisted at the torso. All right, Kirk. You'll be making out in no time, I thought. Except I'd not accounted for the fact that the girl next to me would be chatting with her friends in front of us, so when I finally went for her, I ended up elbowing the poor girl in the forehead. And maybe this is where this whole what to do with my arms insecurity began. I don't know. When Jessica and I are on the couch at home, I generally have one arm stretched back behind her and the other one stretched out behind an invisible person, as if I'm making moves on two Jessicas. And this is fine when we're home, alone. But when friends are over, my sprawling out across nearly 7 feet of sofa comes across as a little less to myself than the norms would dictate. Moving on to work. In my old career, I often found myself leading meetings, hosting presentations, in other words, oh shit, people are watching me now, what do I do with these long-ass arms type territory? Well, anybody who's anybody knows that crossing your arms is way too defensive a posture to make if you're trying to make any connections. One of the great sales guys of all time, my mentor in Pride of New Zealand, James Ardern, once told me, Kick, you've got to be more open with your body language. Next meeting we go into, take your wrists and set them face up on the table while you're talking. Okay, James, whatever. I'm serious, Kirk. Give them your wrists. Let them know they can slit them if they want. But that you trust that they won't. I thought he was joking. It sort of fit into his over-the-top commitment to the selling of car wheel shtick that he had back then. But when we walked into the next meeting, I realized he wasn't kidding at all. As I fast-talked my way through 20 slides filled with technical jargon and profit scenarios, my 6'5" Kiwi boss sat there, palms lying up on the table, his wrists completely vulnerable and defenseless. Believe it or not, but I actually adopted this technique. I had already looked up to James when he imparted this wisdom on me, but I took to him even more once I realized that I wasn't the only one in the company wondering what to do with my arms all the time. You really should try it out sometime. I tended to only give a little of my wrist, elevating maybe 45 degrees from the table rather than the flat as a pancake style that James went with, but to each his own. Dancing presents unique challenges when it comes to putting our arms someplace. I mean, think back for a moment in your brain to when you saw a bad dancer. I'm talking no rhythm, dice rolling, overbite having bad. What do you see in this memory? Who do you see in this memory? Is it you? Probably. But whether it's you or whether it's someone else, I bet you dollars to disco that whoever it is in your memory of bad dancer, they're making some grave errors with their arms. Right? Maybe they're holding invisible suitcases. Maybe they're raising their roof. Maybe they're doing that two-handed cane grab that our current president started doing after he overdosed on hydroxychloroquine. But while the dance floor has seen its share of wingspan misappropriation, it's no match for the arena that has proven most troublesome, at least to me, the bedroom. Don't worry, Mom, this isn't a talk in the attic after dark. The natural solution to my lanky arms problem in the bedroom is, of course, to spoon. But what does being a big spoon really mean? One arm, the bottom one, ends up under Jessica's slender neck. The other one, the top arm, finds the full burden of itself atop Jessica's petite frame, and even if that were comfortable for me, which it's not, it certainly isn't for poor Jess, who had probably never considered what it might feel like to sleep on a woodpile, but now knows. So what happens each and every night after we try and fail a spooning arrangement is I turn my back the other way, and I grab myself the biggest, firmest pillow available. I can squeeze a pillow without fear of injuring it. Problem solved, right? Not exactly. Because while I fall asleep with my trusty spoon pillow each night, I wake up to a very different scenario each and every morning. As if by some sleep-induced greed that converts me from sheep counter to hill conqueror, I unconsciously send my subordinates out into the dark bedroom on a clear mission of finders keepers. Because every morning, I wake up and bear hug control of all but one of the pillows, all of the blankets, even Jessica sometimes. Throughout the night, my hands work tirelessly to find more items to grab. I mean, nothing is safe. Sometimes we joke that it won't be long before the ceiling fan itself is pulled down into my loving arms throughout the evening. It's bizarre, isn't it? But completely true. Picture a big electromagnet and everything in the room is metal. That's kind of the imagery. But while we're on the subject of collecting pillows, and before we go, I have to mention the newest addition to our minimalist bedroom decor. It was just last week when, as we were changing our bedding, I saw for the first time a new pillowcase that Jessica had found at the thrift shop. This particular item really stood out against our typically monochromatic approach to fabrics, I must admit, because our newest pillowcase just so happened to be of the silk leopard print variety. A true fish out of water story. "Ooh, who's the new sexy girl in town?" I asked Jessica of the new pillowcase. Jessica just laughed before stuffing the saddest of our large pillow collection into this lovely new silk case. If we were to have all seven of our bedroom pillows lined up, you would have seen six basic white pillows and one sexy exotic leopard print pillow. Like when you see a group of women out at the bar, and it's one divorcee decked out in an animal print cocktail dress while the rest of her married friends are rocking sweaters. Like the Golden Girls, an old leopard print was Blanche. Well, I've got to say, Blanche has lived up to my expectations. That saucy little minx keeps finding her way into my mound of overnight conquests, and in typical Blanche fashion, while the pillow is within my embrace, her jungle cat top is almost always strewn across the bedroom floor. Ooh, Blanche. This sexy sidebar to the silky world of pillow-based seduction has taken me off message, but I want to close the loop so we can get back to finding some solutions. So let's do that. Help me figure out what to do with my arms. What do you do with your arms? Do you ever find yourself longing for those overhead loops that buses and trains have? I do. Do you ever find yourself collecting random furnishings throughout the night? Do you wish it was socially acceptable to put your hands just under your tits and walk around like an abstract flamingo? These are not rhetorical questions, people. If you're watching on YouTube, let's see your tips on wingspan strategy in the comment section below. If you're listening somewhere else, then leave your limb management input beneath the episode's posts on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, whatever. And if you think this whole thing is silly, if you think I'm making a mountain out of a bedroom pillow pile, then I urge you to make a conscious effort next time you're standing around waiting for something to keep your phone out of your hands, keep your eyes up on the actual world around you, and to take note of what you're doing with your arms. If you figure out a good place to put those bad boys, then let me know. Peace out, y'all. Thank you.